Okay, the Esrog tree is similar to other trees in three different ways, right? Well, the Yerek and to vegetables, b'derech echad, in one way. Okay, so what's meant to? So they explain. Shoveh le'yilom b'gibon drachim, it's like all other trees in three different ways, namely, le'orlo, u'lervai, u'lishviz. In other words, as far as the rule of Orlo is concerned, which means that the first 3 years that after you planted it, you're not allowed to eat the fruit of it. Lerevai means that on the fourth year, you're supposed to take that fruit to Yerushalayim and eat it and enjoy it over there. Or if it won't last, by the time you make your pilgrimage, then in that case, you do exactly what you did in the case of Maaseh Sheni. Namely, you sell it, and then you save the money. Right, yeah. And the third way in which it's similar is Shvius, that the law of Shvius, whatever we learned about trees, right, when the Shvius take effect for the fruit of trees, applies to the Esrog tree as well. In other words, remember we learned that, for example, according to one opinion, if you plant and it's taken root even one day before Rosh Hashanah, then it goes for the previous year. Another opinion, however, which is more authoritative, we learned that if it is 30 days, it's already taken root and so on. So in that particular case, then we say that that belongs to the sixth year and not to the seventh year. So that rule that we learned in general for trees would apply to the Esrog tree as well. Yeah, it's a tree, right, yes. Rabbi Elizabeth Azariah had guilt, yeah. Okay, yeah, there were some people who had money. Yeah. Yeah. On himself, naturally, but this is why I say, you know, that you, yeah, so you take the surplus and also an exacting, invite other people to come and to enjoy as well. Yeah, well, my surrounding technically should be separated, you know, in its own year.
Yeah,
like that, not the same year. The problem with Rabbi Akiva is here that this was the year, right? So the question is, how could he do it? Okay. All right. Yeah, right. And then they say that in one way it's like vegetables, okay? In that way, they say, Shevishas Lakita So Isuro. That when do you give Miser, in other words, what year of Miser, you know, what type of Miser should be given, it's based upon when you actually gather in the fruit of that tree. Okay?
It's contrary to what the other rule.
Right. Because with the others, what was stressed was when did it root, right, take root, and that is on that basis. But with the Esrog, it didn't work that way. Why didn't it work that way? Well, it may be because the Esrog is a little bit different from other trees in one respect. The Gemara in Sukkah speaks about an Esrog, okay? If you recall, in the Torah, is the word Esrog mentioned in reference to Sukkot? Of course it's not. But it says, "Lekachtem lachem b'yom harishon," right? You have to take for yourselves on the first day of Yom Tov, right? Peri Eitz Hadar, right? The fruit of literally the beautiful tree, right? And then, of course, Kapos Taborim, you know, branches of the palms, Alanaf Eitz Ovos, and also, you know, the leaves of a tree which has very thick bushes, very, very thick. The Arve Gochel and the willows of the brook and so on. And of course, from the modern circle, they try to define all these different things. Okay? So, in their definition of three eights Hadar, they decided that this is the Esrog. Why? So they give different reasons. But one of the outstanding reasons is because they say that it is Hadar be'ilano mishana mishana, which means that the Esrog, unlike other fruits that are going to fall down at the end of the season, it remains in its tree and it can stay on the tree even more than 1 year. Okay? So Hadar be'ilano, this is why it's Hadar, three eights Hadar. As I say, there are other reasons too. But this is one reason that they give for it, okay? So, therefore, it may be that in this particular case, why do they say that it follows the rule for vegetables? Because vegetables are gathered at various times, not at one time in general, but, you know, as soon as Rashi, for example, says, you know, you finally gather the vegetables together, you can sow a new patch and have another batch of vegetables growing. So you know, we're not thinking now in terms of where we live, where you have one vegetable season. You know, you plant it in the spring and you hope to harvest it either sometime in the summer or in the fall. Okay, but in Eretz Israel and in warm countries, it is possible to have more than one crop during the course of a year. So if that's the case, then when do we give the miser for vegetables? The answer is when we gather enough vegetables together until you give mice, and depending upon what it is. So the same thing with the Esrog tree.
Another reason here. He says that unlike other trees, the Esrog tree is grown by irrigation and constant as vegetables are, and therefore in that respect it is similar to vegetables.
Well, it's based upon the fact that the word Hadar in the Gemara in Sukkah equates it with the word for water. You know, they knew a lot of Greek and they spoke Greek. How do I say water in Greek? It's hudar. Of course, I'm talking about classical Greek, which in English letters would be H-Y-D-A-R. Or, right, as you see it, right, exactly. Yeah. So, That part of the word that you find, you know, like in hydrogen or something like that, that means water. Okay?
Hydrogen.
Yeah, that's the Greek word for water. So they equate it with the word also for water. So you can see there's more than one reason that they give, okay? But I didn't want to schlep in every single definition. Hashka'ah. Yeah, hashka'a.
Hashka'a is irrigation?
Yeah, right. There may be other words too. But the Gemara uses the word, for example, the beginning of Maseches Moed Katan. Okay? Begins, the very first mishnah, Bashkin Beis Hashlachin. In other words, where you have a field which depends upon irrigation, then it's permitted to irrigate it during Chol Hamoed. Okay? Because otherwise the vegetables or whatever is growing over there would die if you don't irrigate it. So in the Chol Hamoed, you're permitted to do it. Normally you're not allowed to do it because it's melacha and you're supposed to enjoy Chol Hamoed as yontif, you understand? But if there's an emergency situation that arises, so they give. So the word that they use over there is the word mashkeh, mashkin, okay? So hashka'ah would be irrigation. But the chances are that they may have other words as well. So,
Would
the implication would be that you give again. As a normal rule, no. I mean, we know that the average tree grows once during its season, and that's it, you know.
But
the Esrog, because of its peculiar nature, that the fruit can exist on the tree longer than a year, right?
But is the Esrog?
Yes. The answer is that people used to take Esrogim and either eat them as a fruit, before, as you know, your bubbas used to do. They would take them, they would make jelly jams and things like that out of their slogan, right? But definitely people ate their slogan, just as we eat, let's say, oranges, which in those days they didn't know, but they did eat their slogan, okay? Pardon me? Not at that time. They had to invent the word for an orange, right? Tapuach Zahav.
Where did the orange come from?
Came from a Mediterranean country, but probably from places like Spain or, you know, that's probably the most likely, around Spain or Italy or something like that. I mean, look, in France, it was not native to France, right? So finally, when the French started to eat oranges, what do they call it? They called it pomme d'or, which means literally the golden apple. So, Baruch Hashem, we had linguists in Eretz Yisrael. They also wanted to give a name, so what did they do? So they called it Tapuach Zahav. Okay? The golden apple, right. The golden apple. And then, of course, people got tired of saying Tapuach Zahav, so they made it Tapuz. Okay, yeah.
Why do they single out the Esrog in this particular case? What, all the fruits don't ripen at the same time. All the fruits have different growth rates. All the fruits
presumably they're all within the same season.
And they only have one.
You know, apples come out at certain at the early part of the year. Oranges may come out later in the year.
Whatever.
Right. I mean,
but they have their season, and that's it.
Different.
I mean,
apricots come out differently.
All right. So this is the reason why. You know, according to some, it should be, you know, according to Lekitaso, the time that you collect it, right? That you gather it. According to another one, another opinion that we heard earlier, we learned that it was according to Chanata.
That would simplify.
In other words, you know, when does the blossom first disappear and the fruit begins to appear?
Yeah, but
right?
I mean, the picking time simplifies the whole process.
Fine, it would. But they felt that the Esrog was an exception.
You know?
Okay.
Blossoms,
you know.
Blossom is the important.
No, as to how to date, you know, whether the tree belongs to this year or that year or something like that. Right, it depends on the blossoming. Right, yeah, right. So they really give different opinions, you know. There isn't one.
Rabbis wanted to make it simple.
Right.
No. Make it serious.
All right. As I said, many of them were farmers, and therefore, based upon their own observations, you know, this is how they determined things.
They got to argue with it.
Yeah, right. Okay. All right. So, at any rate, this is Divrei Rabban Gamliel. This is Rabban Gamliel's opinion, okay? About the Esrog tree. And, of course, what was Rabbi Akiva gathering? He was gathering fruit from the Esrog, so that therefore would fall into the category of following the rule for Rabban Gamliel, according to this opinion now. Okay? According to... Right? So this is what according to Rabbi Yossi Bar Yehuda says.
So what is the difference between Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Eliezer's opinion?
All right, so let's see what Rabbi Eliezer says. Rabbi Eliezer, he says, what? Esrog shover le'yilon l'chol davar. He says that an esrog is like any other tree in every respect. Okay? Which means that even the same thing as far as Meisur is concerned, right? You go and you follow whatever rules you have for the other trees. That's what to follow. Okay? That's his opinion. All right?
And the idea which he would pick, he's opting for the simple answer.
Yeah, right.
Not making it complicated.
So... And now they ask the following question upon Rabbi Akiva, but it's a general question. It says, "Mi av dinon kitrei chumre?" Now, is it right for a person to follow two machmir's opinions?
That's
what they're asking.
Two
right?
Contradictory opinions.
Obviously, we're talking about contradictory, right? Is it right for a person to do it? And now they quote the very famous statement, which says, the Hortanya, didn't we learn Leolam always Halacha Kedivrei Beis Hillel, right? That the Halacha follows Beis Hillel, right? But Rotzer Lasos Kedivrei Beis Shammai, Also could live, also. But if a person wants to follow the opinion of Shammai, he can do so. Kidivrei Beis Hillel, if he wants to follow Beis Hillel, also.
You can do that too.
So far, so good.
Everybody's happy.
Yeah. Mekulei Beis Shammai, Mekulei Beis Hillel. Oy, that's a Russia, he says. But if a person chooses only the lenient opinions of Beis Hillel and only the lenient opinions of Beis Shammai, then in that case, he's a wicked person. Yeah, okay? What if, on the other hand, Mechumrei Beis Shammai, Mechumrei Beis Hillel? And what if, on the contrary, he follows all the, you know, the strict opinions, right, of Beis Shammai, and the strict opinions of Beis Hillel, never goes in for any lenient opinion, right? Then in that case, you know what they say about him. Yeah. Yes. So Allah Barakosavim, they don't call him a Russian. So concerning him, there's a pasuk, happens to be a pasuk in the book of Kehelet. The pasuk says, "The haksil b'choshech holeich," that the fool walks in darkness. In other words, they say that he is foolish because, instead of being consistent, you know, following consistent in one opinion, he is following everybody's strict opinion. So yes.
Isn't that all of, like, self-flagellation?
Well, I'm kind of confused.
It all depends what the chumra is, though. Yeah.
I'm kind of confused. Where? I don't see where there's a lenient opinion and a strict opinion here, neither Shammai or Hillel.
No, they're only taking one particular case.
Yeah.
But if you go through the Gemara, this is a general rule, right? This is a general rule concerning wherever there's a machlokas between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai. Okay? Okay. So
somebody follows both the strict,
he follows only the strict opinions of both of them.
Then
in that case, he's a fool. That's what it says.
I mean, in every respect.
Yeah, right.
Not necessarily in this particular instance.
Not just in this instance, right, but, you know, in other words, what are they implying?
Yeah.
They're implying over here that Rabbi Akiva was foolish in order to do what? That he should follow two chumras, right?
That he gave
he gave two different types of maaser, right? That's what they're applying. But we didn't finish
Rabbi
yet. We didn't finish yet this general rule.
I call him Rabbi Akiva, right? Fool,
yeah. Elo, but rather, what should be a person's way? If he follows the opinions of Beis Shammai, then he should be consistent with what? Bikulehen or Bikumrehen. In other words, accept those cases where Beis Shammai are more lenient than Beis Hillel, and accept also those cases where Beis Shammai is more machmir, right? It's stricter than Beis Hillel. And Ike Beis Hillel. And if you follow the opinion of Beis Hillel, then again it's what? Bikulehen or Bikumrehen. Right, then you should follow the opinion, both as far as the lenient opinions of Beis Hillel, but also where they are more machmir, right, where they are even stricter in their interpretation than Beis Shammai. In other words, you have to follow a school
consistently.
This is what they're saying over here. And naturally, what do they recommend? They recommend that you should follow Beis Hillel, but, you know, follow it both where Beis Hillel is lenient and also where Beis Hillel is more machmir.
At least Shammai on the cold.
No. There's an opinion somewhere also that says that in the days of the Messiah, at that particular point, then everybody will act according to Beis Shammai. Because we'll be purified from all the problems that we have in this world. We need more leniencies, right?
Right.
And they will be able to observe a you know, the stricter interpretation. That would be the more idyllic way of life. Okay. So they give credit to Beis Shammai.
Okay.
But I mean, we know consistently.
Yeah,
I would simply quote to you just two opinions of Beis Shammai that we're all familiar with. Okay, Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. One of them is in reference to the lighting of the Hanukkah candles. As you're aware, Beis Shammai said that the first night of Hanukkah, we light 8 candles, the second night 7, the sixth third night 6, and so on. And you keep on going down. You decrease them, okay? Basically, on the other hand, they say that, you know, the first night you light 1 candle, second night 2 candles, and so on and so forth, okay? And, of course, we know which opinion do we follow. We follow, of course, Beis Hillel in this particular case. I gave the Devar Torah this past Shabbos and spoke only for a couple of minutes. So I said, we're all familiar, you know, with this machlokes between them. But I think that psychologically we're trying to make a point. What is the point? So I said that the point, in my opinion, was that we're always looking forward to a great event. No sooner do we have, you know, the end of Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot, and so on, right? Now, what's the next holiday that we look forward to? We begin thinking forward, in, you know, in terms of Hanukkah, okay? So, when Hanukkah finally arrives, we want to celebrate it, you know, with all the festivity and glory and everything else that we can. So this is the opinion of the Beis Shammai. Do it by lighting the complete menorah, right, all eight candles and so on. And after that, as the days go on, you know, it begins to lose a little bit of its glamour, right?
Yeah.
And so you decrease the number of candles.
That makes sense.
Well, that's Beis Shammai's opinion. I said, so why did Beis Hillel do the other way? That you start
because
with one
Shammai
and one?
Because Shammai did it this way, that's why he went the other way.
I'm saying psychologically, the reason being that you want to try to build up the enthusiasm for all 8 days of Hanukkah, not to celebrate simply one day of Hanukkah, and so therefore you keep on building up and up and up and up. Of course, as the Gemara says, it's Balad Bakodesh Vilei Marid. In other words, you go up when it comes to holy things, right? You ascend, you don't descend, and so on. So that was my Devar Torah this past Shabbos. So that's one case where we know definitely in our own practice. You know, we're familiar that we follow
Israel. It interests me that there wasn't a third opinion, which was all 8 candles on all night. Seriously, think about it. We're celebrating this great miracle.
Yeah, but then you wouldn't reference to the 7 different days. 7 days of
for 7 days.
Yeah, but if you're burning 8 candles in 7 days, you're not getting the distinction of the time it lasted. Each day is an extra.
Well, obviously, right. They didn't go for it. I'm just saying. You know,
yeah, right. Of course not. Right. Well, obviously, you know, in the Gemara, right. The Gemara wants to stress the next Hanukkah, the fact that the first day, okay, the miracle was that they found the oil. Okay. The second day, the miracle was that it actually managed to last another day. And the third day, Baruch Hashem, it still lasted. And the fourth day, and so on. So that, you know, the great miracle was built up day by day, you see. So, okay, these are all interpretations. Another machlokes between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. Tomorrow in Brachos brings this one. When you make Kiddush, which should you say first? Should you say Borei Pri HaGofen? Or should you say the bracha in which we praise God, you know, Asher Bachavonim Mikolom, Asher Kedishom Mitzvayisim, Ratzavonim, Shavuot, and so on, okay? Which represents what we call Kiddush Hayom, in other words, the sanctification of the day. I'm talking about when we make Kiddush at the table. Okay. Which bracha should come first? The bracha for the wine, or the bracha for what we call Kiddush Hayom? In other words, the bracha in which we thank God for having sanctified us and giving us this day, whether it's Shabbos right or Yom Tov Hashem Baruch Hu and Kolom, etc. And we praise Him, you know, for having given us whatever festival we're celebrating, okay?
We always say the wine.
Of course, we do, but whose opinion are we following? We're following Beis Hillel's opinion.
What does Shammai say?
Shammai says, Punkt Vakert. That the day deserves to be mentioned first, and then after that you make the Kiddush on the wine.
What's that? What did you say?
Sometimes you want to honor something dead to Rabbia.
Right.
Having the wine, you don't want to lose that sanctity of having a bracha over the wine.
Yeah.
You don't want to make that
secondary.
Yeah. Well, of course, I mean, we follow the opinion of the Beis Hillel, obviously. So we're all aware, I mean, we make a bracha. This is why I was shocked when I took a look at the Reform, the Reform Siddur years ago. Punt Faker. Imagine the Reform movement followed by Shammai.
For what reason did Shammai give for that?
No, because he said that the sanctification of the day
is more important.
Is more important. This causes the reason, well, this is the basic reason why we have a Kiddush, in order to celebrate, right. Whereas Beis Hillel says, if you didn't have the wine, then you wouldn't be able to make Kiddush. Although, actually, I have to tell you, you could also make Kiddush over challah, too. Right. You know that. You make it over habos, if you don't have wine. Yeah. But, you know, normally we're accustomed to make it over wine or grape juice, you know,
grape juice.
The same
how
as wine.
How do you make Kiddush over
challah? What you'd have to do is first to wash. First have to wash.
Right.
And then, you know, when you make the bracha, you say, Baruch Hashem, Hamotzi Lefenoros, and then you continue with the rest of the Kiddush.
Yeah.
And then you continue with the rest of the Kiddush.
And you cut the challah, you take a piece of challah, like a Hamotzi.
Yeah, right. So that's, if you don't have wine, then in that case, that's what you could do. Yeah.
It's allowed.
Right.
No.
You made hamotzi. You said the bracha hamotzi instead of bari pri hagofen.
Yeah,
that's why I say you would have to wash first before you actually start in to make kiddush in order to do that. Okay. Yeah.
No.
Not exactly.
Don't say
because
that.
You're still making the bracha before before the kiddush hayom. Right. Okay. So at any rate, I mean, it's interesting that these are cases where we follow Beis Hillel and not Beis Shammai, and you know, we're familiar with these. I'm not going into the thousand different machlokeses that they had about
well,
all kinds of things.
Why is this argument brought up here?
What?
Why is this argument brought up here?
Oh, it's brought up over here about Rabbi Akiva. How come?
Rabbi Akiva?
Yeah, Rabbi Akiva. What business is he doing, you know, giving two tithes? Why? Either follow Beis Shammai. Well, follow Beis Hillel.
Poor Rabbi.
But it would seem, you know, from his action that he's trying to satisfy everybody, Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, and that's why they bring this in to say, you got to be consistent. Either you go according to Beis Shammai in every case, or you go according to Beis Hillel in every case. Okay. Yeah, so he gets spelled out over here too. Okay. Right. So we'll finish this little sentence over here.
No.
So it says
Rabbi Akiva,
Rabbi Akiva Gomre says, yeah, Rabbi Akiva knew that there was a tradition, right, that either it is the first of Shvat or what, or the 15th of Shvat. But it says istabekle, which in this case means, but he was in doubt. He was in doubt. It's from the word suffik, right? The lawyer da, and he didn't know Beis Hillel, Be'echa B'Shvat, whether it was Beis Hillel who said that on the first day of Shvat, this is the Rosh Hashanah, or E B'tu B'Shvat, or whether they said it was on the 15th of Shvat. Okay? Now he wanted, in other words, according to this, to follow whose opinion? Beis Hillel. It's not following Beis Shammai, but he just didn't remember whether Beis Hillel were the ones who maintained that it's the first of Shvat, or whether it was the 15th of Shvat.
Should look it up.
So that therefore he was being consistent with one opinion and not being consistent with, or tried to be consistent with two different opinions. All right, we'll stop at this point this evening. Today is the 22nd of December, and 1999, oh boy, we have very few more days to count in 1999, okay? And we are on Yud Dalet Omid Beis, continuing from where we left off last week, where we were discussing the action of Rabbi Akiva to find out, did he really follow the opinion of Beis Shammai or Beis Hillel? And we said, the last thing that we said is that in reality he wasn't disputing Beis Hillel, he was following Beis Hillel, but he was not sure in his own tradition whether he had heard that Beis Hillel said that it was the first of Shvat or whether it was the second of Shvat, the 15th of Shvat. Okay, so now we continue. All right, the Omar Rabbi Yossi, or Omru, all right, so they said as follows, Rabbi Yossi Bar Yehuda Omer, they quote now Rabbi Yossi bar Yehuda, and they say that he says as follows. He says, Lo minhag beishamayu beisila lo hagbo. No, he said, it wasn't a question. He wasn't following either the custom of beishamay or the custom of beisila leader. Elo minhag Rabbi Gamliel of Rabbi Eliezer no hagbo. But rather, he was following the custom of Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Eliezer. Namely, yeah, all right, it says, Noag bo b'yecha b'shvat, in other words, he followed the business about the first of Shvat, Givei Shammai, Noag bo, is he really following that? So, Amar Rabbi Chanina, Yitim Rabbi Chananya, see, they're asking, this is part of the general question. We made a statement now that he didn't follow either Beis Shammai or Beis Hillel. That's a statement. I mean, naturally, it contradicts the previous conclusion that we came to. But as we're going to see tonight, they keep on questioning again and again every assumption that we make. And they have a counter-argument for it. Okay. So, what they're saying is, okay, we have another quotation. What is the quotation? He says, Amar Rabbi Chanina, there are those that Rabbi Chanina said, V'yitem Rabbi Chananya. Others say it wasn't Chanina, but Chananya. Okay. You notice it's the same letters, but they're two different gentlemen, okay? All right. The case that we're talking about over here is what? The Esrog. Remember, the whole discussion started with the idea that he gathered fruit from the Esrog tree, right? And at the time, he wasn't certain what kind of miser, what kind of tithing to give. So as a result, he decided to do what? He decided to give two types of miser. One for the second year and one for the third year. Okay? This is what the discussion was at that time. Right. Well, okay, maybe Efshayor, Efshanein. So as we'll see, okay? Let's see, who bit it? Yep. Okay. So say Hocha be Esav Shachanta Perisov Konim to Bishvat. All right. The Idoch Shvat Askinim. All right. They have a following opinion. It says that here we're talking about an Esrog tree where its fruits they blossomed, all right, before two Bishvat of what year? The Idoch Kisav. Okay. Well, I think it's better if we put a period before Kodem Tu Bishvat, Kodem Tu, Kodem Tesvat. Okay. Problem is over here that there's no punctuation, as you know, in the Talmud. Sometimes you can interpret it this way, and sometimes you can interpret it that way as to where the punctuation should be. Okay. So, the problem is here we have an Esrog tree where the blossoms began when? Before Tu B'Shvat. Okay. Well, now, 15th. Yeah, before the 15th of Shvat. Yeah, here. How about this? Right, okay. We're on Yud Dalet Omid Beis, in the middle of it, okay? Yeah. Okay. So, the problem over here is that if we follow the opinion of Beis Hillel, as we learned, I mean, that this is the prevailing opinion, right? Then in that particular case, to what year should this, should the fruit be assigned? Should it be assigned to the previous year, or should it be assigned to the new year? It is the month of Shvat, right? But it's before the 15th. Obviously, if it were after the 15th of Shvat, there would be no question, you know, that the fruit is to be assigned to the new year that begins on Tu B'Shvat. Okay. But here not. So, okay, if that's the case, all right, the Yidosh Shvat, in other words, the previous Shvat, Askina, right, Uvedin, who he says, and this Taka, it makes sense. Why? I feel it kodem l'chein, that if any fruit, in other words, should blossom forth prior to Tu B'Shvat, then how should we count it? We should count it as doing what? as belonging to the previous year. Okay. Umasa shehoya kachoya. And whatever it is, this is what happened. Okay, so we follow that. Now, again, as I said, everybody is in disagreement over here. So, Rabina Omar, Rabina says as follows. He says, Kroch v'toni. He says, look, put everybody's opinions together and make a sandwich out of them. In other words, combine them. Okay? Lo echad b'shvat hoyo. It was not the first of Shvat. Elo Shvat. Hoyo, right, but it was rather the 15th of Shvat. Below Minhag Beishamai, Beishilil Nohag, and he did not follow the opinion of either Beishamai or Beishilil. Elo Minhag Rabban Gamliel Rabbi Eliezer Nohag, but rather he followed the opinion of Rabban Gamliel and Rabbi Eliezer. So, okay, God's fine. So, of course, again, we have to come to the problem. So, what do they say? What are they arguing about?
Yeah,
exactly. What are they arguing about? They are arguing about as follows. It started, if you remember, at the top of the page. Okay? If you take a look at the third line up there, on the top of the page. Okay? Third from the top. Minhag Rabban Gamliel, right? And Rabbi Eliezer. Okay? So, Bitnan, remember, we learned the following Mishnah, which says that an esrog shover le'ilon begimot rochim, that an esrog is like any other tree in three different ways, u'le'yerek, and like vegetables v'derech echot. Okay? In one way. Shover le'ilon, it said over there, that it is like a tree begimot rochim in three ways. In what way? Le'orla v'le'rvai v'le'shvi'is. In other words, it follows the rule that what? That the determination as to what is the age of the tree, so that you'll know whether the first 3 years in which you're not allowed to use the fruit, when would they begin, right? Does it begin from the day that you put it in the ground? Obviously not. But you do go according to what? According to the time that you planted it, machnit. When you planted it, okay? And then, when Tu B'Shvat comes along, then what do you say? You say that that one previous year, correct? That counts as 1 year. And then you have two more years before you're allowed to do what? To come to the next stage, which is called Revai. And what is Revai? Revai, which means literally the fourth year. At that point, the Torah says, what do you do with your fruit? You have to take it to Yerushalayim and enjoy it. If you can't take it to Yerushalayim, then what do you have to do? You have to redeem it, right? You sell it and you take the money and you put that aside instead. Okay, so that's redeeming. That's called pidyon, all right? So in these two areas already, the esrog tree is no different from any other tree. This is what they're saying. It's no different than any other tree. And finally, what is the third thing in which they say? Shavuos. Namely, that fruit that grows during the seventh year, obviously you cannot kill or anything like that, but whatever laws apply to fruit that grows in the seventh year will apply equally to the fruit of the esrog tree. Okay? So far, so good. And then it says, however, there is one way, at least this is the opinion of Rabbi Gamliel, okay? And he says, but there is in one area in which it is like a vegetable. How is it like a vegetable? So he says, Shabishasto kitoso isura. He says that when it comes to giving maisa, when it comes to giving tithes, then you do it like in the case of vegetables. Now, what is the case of vegetables? So we already said before that with vegetables, it's when you gather it. That's when you give the maisa from it. So, in other words, with the esrog, the fruit of the esrog tree, likewise, when you gather it, that's what you do. Now, this is, of course, Rabban Gamliel's opinion. Now, obviously, there's something there that was never stated by Hillel, who is the great defender of Tu B'Shvat, right? Namely, the idea that the fruit itself would be subject to Maisa when? Not according to the calendar year, but it would be subject according to when you gather the fruit. At that point, it becomes liable, you know, for giving Maisa, okay? All right. This is what he said. Okay. And What did Rabbi Eliezer say? So we see, he says also, yeah, Esrog Shavu Leilim, Esrog Shavu Leilim Becholdomer. He says that the Esrog tree is like any other tree in every respect. In other words, he disagrees in one area, namely, when do you gather, right? He says that doesn't apply, that it's like any other tree, and therefore you go purely on the basis of when it is Tu B'Shvat, okay? So far, this would seem to be all right. Now, obviously, Rabbi Akiva did not, he can't say that he really did it according to one or according to the other opinion. This is the problem that we're now having over here, okay? Yes, I mentioned that fact, that one of the things that's characteristic of the esrog is that unlike the average fruit tree where the fruit, it's going to drop if you don't pick it beforehand, right? With the esrog, it could stay from one year to the next year, so that you don't have to rush to pick it. That's the reason why they say that it may be like vegetables in that, since it doesn't immediately, you know, it's not confined to one season, but it stays. So in that particular case, whenever you gather it, that's when you give bison. If you gather it in year one or year two of the cycle, then in that particular case you have to give Maaser Rishon or Maaser Sheni. If you gather it in year three, then in that case you give Maaser Rishon or Maaser Shlishi. The same thing follows as far as 4, 5, and 6, okay? And of course, with Shviyas, there it's subject to a different rule altogether, because as we said, fruit that grows in Shviyas is what? It's Potter Min HaMaaser, right? You don't give tithes from it because it doesn't belong to you. Who does it belong to? Anybody. Technically, anybody can come and pick fruit and eat it. Not to gather it and to sell it, but to come and to eat it. That you're permitted to do. Okay? So, in that case, there is no maaser that's involved because it's not your fruit during that year. It belongs to anybody. Okay? It's hefker, so to speak. All right. So, so Ravina tries to make everybody happy by saying, no, we're not talking about the first day of Shvat, we're talking about Tu B'Shvat Taka as being the determining factor as far as the age of a tree is concerned. And likewise, he did not follow the minhag of either Beit Shammai or Beit Hillel as far as what the Maaser is concerned, but rather the minhag of Rabbi Yamdil and Rabbi Eliezer, which would mean that, as I said, it works as far as those things as Orlo, right, and Revai and Shviz. And that in those three areas, there's no machlokes between these two, but there is the machlokes, as we saw, as far as when you gather it. There will be a difference. Okay. So it's a little hard to say that he followed both of their opinions, because obviously they themselves don't agree in every particular, only in 3 out of 4 particulars. Okay. All right. So Omar Rabba. Rabba comes along with a different idea. He says, Omar Rabba Baratham. Okay, he says, Hashto, he says, the Omar Rabban Yamliel. Now that you mention the fact about Rabban Gamliel, so we have to come to the conclusion what? That Esrog, Achale Kitoso, Isuro Kierik. And if you say that the Esrog, you have to give Baiser according to the time when you gather the fruit in, and because in that case it is to be compared to vegetables, right? So he says, Rosh Hashanah Shalo Tishrei. Then if that's the case, you know when Rosh Hashanah should be in? Not the first of Shvat, and not the 15th of Shvat, but rather what? The first of Tishrei. This should be the determining factor. Because this is true in general for trees and for vegetables and things like that, as we said before. Okay, this is what he said. Okay, that is as far as what? As far as Orlo is concerned, as far as Revai is concerned, and as far as Shvi is concerned. Those three areas, with every tree, he says, don't go according to the 15th of Shvat, even though Beis Hillel says so, right? But he says, rather, it should be like the general rule, namely, that when does a new year begin as far as determining, for example, when is Shviyas? Begins the first of Tishrei. That's when Shviyas takes effect. Okay? And therefore, he says that Orlov, for example, and Revai should also follow the same rule. Should. Okay? And therefore, giving Maaser should follow not whether it's the first of Shvat or the 15th of Shvat, but rather, when was the first day of Tishrei? And when did it grow? When did you finally get the fruit, you say? So that this is what he's saying over here. So this is the opinion of our Bar Huna. So Mesve, so this, a rejoinder. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer, he says, wait a minute. We have learned as follows. Likeit Esrog Erev Tu Bishvat Achmei Tovei HaShemesh. Let's say a man went and he gathered Esrog fruit when? Just before Tu Bishvat. In other words, on the 14th of Shvat, right? Liftos Erev. No, Liftos Erev means before it got evening. Okay? In other words, sometime during the day, including the afternoon of the 14th day of Shvat, he went and he gathered fruits from the Esrog tree.